Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Nancy Nichols has a job that makes her physically ill, or at least it did for the past several years. More than 15 years into her successful run as chief dining critic for D Magazine, all those amazing restaurant meals most of us only wish we could get paid to eat began to turn on her. She started working from home most days, the better to cope with frequent, disruptive, and embarrassing bouts of diarrhea. Her body ached, her mind grew cloudy. She was weak and dizzy, and once woke up literally unable to move. Not surprisingly, she feared she was dying. As she writes in a candid and courageous essay in this month's issue of D, she began a long series of doctor visits and medical procedures before finally arriving at the realization that she had developed a crippling gluten intolerance. Nancy Nichols is still writing for D, but she has stepped down from the kind of restaurant reviewing that made her name. Her essay titled My Job Nearly Killed Me appears in the March issue. And by the way, you can listen to Stephen Becker's story about Nancy after the show, of course, at keranews.org. Nancy, welcome back to Think.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Chris. And thank you to Stephen for the wonderful lunch and interview that I did with him earlier this week.
You open this piece in media res, as they say. You're on the table asking to view your own colonoscopy, which I have to imagine is like a first for D Magazine.
Yeah, I think it probably is a first. I've had a few firsts.
How did you decide to sort of drop into this right there? I mean, did you go around and around about the best way to begin this story?
Well, you know, the first thing you want to do on any story is hook somebody in the story. And it was like a moment in my journey that was pretty visual and pretty graphic and extremely true. And it told a lot about me because I am, just sort of a glutton. sorry about that. I mean, I'm just naturally curious, and I do like to – I'm kind of a scientific nerd, and I kind of like to see stuff like that. So it kind of gave you an insight into what kind of person that I am and what a high tolerance for pain that I have. And I just thought that, anybody who's been through colonoscopy and imagined doing it without the sedative would not be able to stop reading. So, it's just a – cheap hook.
Well, I would imagine that you get asked a lot or have over the course of your career about, weight gain and how do you prevent mm-hmm. getting fat when you write about restaurants for a living. Was it pretty rare that people would say, how do you avoid getting sick from writing about restaurants for a living?
Well, I never was really asked how my health was affected, although I did bring it up from time to time because one of the reasons I controlled my weight was by not eating when I was not working, which anybody knows is a horrible way to live. I mean, like skipping breakfast or eating an apple or something like that and then working through lunch and then all of a sudden at 2:30 just going like, oh, my God, I forgot to eat lunch and having that just, fried burnout feeling and then eating a takeout salad over your keyboard and then eating the majority of your calories that evening, and eating four or five different entrees, dessert, wine, cocktails, for the most part, and three or four times a week, it just catches up with you. And but I have been asked about, how do I not weigh 400 pounds? And that's why. It's mm-hmm. because I didn't eat and caught up with me.
Before you got sick, after those nights where you would be at a restaurant, you would be trying lots of different entrees and wines and whatever, did you often feel like, did you deal with things like indigestion? And when this first started for you, did you think, oh, it's just worse than it used to be?
Oh, it started a long time ago, like 10 years ago. Hmm. And it's not funny, haha, but it's interesting that since the article hit the newsstands and particularly online, I've heard from several other food writers that have said, oh, my God, I can't believe that you told the truth about what we all go through because none of us want to admit how much it hurts our gastrointestinal system. And three of them shared, their IBS symptoms.
Irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah, that they've been diagnosed with. And that's just sort of that catch-all for anything that, you know, when you suffer from the hamster wheel of acid reflux, you know, bloating, gas, diarrhea, you know, all of that. And they do an upper and lower GI. And, you know, if they don't see anything, they just call it irritable bowel syndrome. And I had three of those where my gastrointernist, whatever, never did a thyroid test. And the first one of the first things my endocrinologist asked me was, why did he not do one? And I said, you're going to have to ask him. So,
well, it's like if you're, you know, looking for a certain kind of problem, that's the only problem you can conceive of. You know, with no disrespect, I guess, to the doctors, they're looking for what fits their specialty, right?
I suppose, but it's the symptoms are so much the same. Mm-hmm. And in his report, he even wrote, there are no visible signs of, you know, celiac or sprue, or which are what they test for when they test for celiac disease. So obviously he was testing for some kind of thyroid issue, but not running a thyroid scan. So,
meanwhile,
which is not uncommon. I'll just tell you that. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's one of the reasons why I've just gotten so dismayed with the medical profession is, in my own experience, is because you kind of have to know what to ask for these days, because a lot of tests are expensive, and if you know, you have to kind of like study your own body and dive into the internet because it takes for a long time, but there's a lot of good information there.
What's funny about that is that I think a lot of doctors hate that patients do this, right?
They
hate that you go in there and think, here's what I think is wrong with me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm sure for all the stories of people misdiagnosing themselves, there are people who catch things.
Well, here's how I kind of combated that because first of all, I had a really great doctor for 20 years, a gynecologist, Jan Jensen Goss, and I went to her for everything, which I think is kind of common for some women who develop a close relationship with their gynecologist, you know, for colds or, you know, flu or, you know, I mean, I certainly wouldn't go to her if I broke my arm, but you get my drift. But other doctors, which I refer to as my ologist, you know, I've had a rheumatologist, I've been diagnosed with three or four different kinds of arthritis, which I now don't have. So I've been sort of dismayed. And the way I've gotten around it is by doing this research and writing down my symptoms and my concerns, things that I've learned from the internet and things that I want to know and think tests that I might want to know, and writing them down on a piece of paper and reading it to the doctor when I sat down, and then handing it to them and asking them to keep it in my file. And they seemed to be more open to accepting like internet information that way, because then they can start it. You can start a dialogue. It worked for me anyway.
So all this time you were having problems, you would talk to your sister and she kept saying, Nancy, I think it's a gluten thing. And what was your response to her?
Oh, my God, I thought she was nuts. But my sister, Amy Drago, she was on it about 3 years ago. And mostly because she was going to the functional medicine way long before I was. And she has a daughter, Mia, who was an athlete. Is an athlete, and all of a sudden just started, you know, lethargy, you know, constipation, diarrhea, the whole IBS thing, went through all these tests, and the doctor, she didn't test positive for celiac, and they did not run gluten sensitivity tests on her because they just didn't believe in that concept, which is very common. And my sister was convinced that it was gluten. And she took her off of gluten, and 2 weeks later, I mean, this young girl just turned around, and a year later, she's gained 25 pounds in all the right ways. She's got her energy back. She's a complete jock and drama. You know, she's now into plays, and I mean, and even after that, even after sitting there looking at my niece and just shedding tears over her turnaround, when my sister said to me, "You need to do that," I just said, "No, I can't. It's my job." You know, and that's what stopped me. It's because it was my job, and I was afraid I was going to lose it.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, because there's not just the issue of, you know, people think, I don't know if I want to give up this food, or maybe that's not the problem. This is not just, this is your personal identity, your professional identity. It's everything you've built in your career.
Yeah, and guess what? Doctors don't want to work as fast as you do when you need to get answers like that. Mm-hmm. Because once I became aware of when I went to my gynecologist initially, and she did a blood test after I really did think I woke up one morning and I really did just thought that I'd had a stroke or something. And I asked for a blood test, and I said, "Just test everything, because I have cancer, I had a stroke, something just happened." And she called me the next day, and my vitamin D level was extremely low, which was another huge problem. Other than the hypothyroidism. So once I started getting into the hypothyroid and vitamin D and started, you know, kind of delving into the internet, you know, once she told me I had it and I got a pill, I was like, yay, you know, done, you know.
And but you weren't done.
And went in a few months later and I was hyper, you know. So for 12 to 14 months, I was swinging back and forth. And the whole time I wasn't telling anybody, because I knew that gluten-free was probably going to have to be my choice eventually, and I bought a lot of lottery tickets just in case, you know, which I never had done before, and because I was afraid. And God, it's amazing how you can go into denial, or I could. I'm a professional. I mean, I could rationalize my way out of a lot of things, and it finally came down to the point where I had to start a conversation with our editor, Tim Rogers, about what was going on, because I had to, you know, give him some warning that this may happen. And eventually it did. So it's hard.
How did you, I'm sure you thought a lot about how it might go and you know, the five scenarios and whatever. How did you finally just work up the courage to walk in there and say, "We have to talk"?
Well, Tim is somewhat easy to talk to. And, you know, I always tell Tim that just as soon as I start to like him, he makes me hate him. But I just looked at him and I said, "I need to talk to you." And we sat down, and he'd already had a little bit of an idea about what was going on. And I told him, I said, "I'm going to have to do it. I'm going to have to step down, or we're going to have to talk about this." And he was like, "Man, I don't know about the budget. I don't know." He said, "You just really got to be prepared that when we go in to talk to Wick," he's our publisher, "that you may not have a job." And we just got up right then and there and walked right into Wick's office and sat down and talked to him. And, you know, for a few minutes there, you know, Wick was processing it, and Tim and I were glancing back and forth at each other, and it really could have gone either way, you know, as any conversation can when you don't plan for it. And he just looked at me and said, "We'll find a way."
We're speaking this hour with Nancy Nichols, the longtime dining critic for D Magazine. Her essay, "My Job Nearly Killed Me," appears in the March issue. It's about her discovery that she could not eat gluten and therefore could not work as a traditional dining critic anymore. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Summer Youth with hands-on workshops in robotics, Minecraft, game design, and visual arts for students entering K-12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is now open at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with writer Nancy Nichols, the longtime dining critic for D Magazine. She has an article in the March issue of the magazine called My Job Nearly Killed Me about her gluten intolerance and how she discovered it and how it has affected her life. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. So, Nancy, we're glad that you got to keep your job or a job with D.
Me too.
But there's still the question of you're the woman who writes about restaurants. And how has that changed? And how are you sort of re-envisioning your career?
Well, like I said before, I'm a professional when it comes to denying. And it really hasn't hit me until the last 10 days that it really is it's a fact now. Because even though I wrote the story, you know, was it before Christmas or just right after Christmas? And I went gluten-free in October. Before I went gluten-free, I ate enough so that I could write through the February issue. So really, I've been sort of performing my job as, you know, food writer up until, like, this issue. Mm-hmm. And so, and then when the which is right now we're shipping the April issue. So when the March issue hit the stands, which is, it's only been a little bit over, like, 10 days, I started getting feedback. And it was, like, so bizarre because I never thought about the feedback until it started coming in.
Oh, like it didn't occur to you that people would respond and...
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, very few people take the time to write, unless it's negative.
They'll tell you when they didn't like it.
Well, and frankly, I've spent the last, especially since, you know, I evolved from a monthly magazine writer to a minutely, you know, blog writer, quite opinionated, that mostly I either get argumentative or just, you know, negative emails. So for all of a sudden for me to get not just emails, but texts and actually phone calls, which has never really happened unless it's been a restaurateur who's, you know, wants my job.
How dare you?
You know, right. Or how dare you? Or can we please talk about this? Can you change that? Or you're wrong? Or, you know, so then all of a sudden, I mean, I was telling you during the break that I got a call yesterday afternoon. And when I picked up the phone, this woman was just like in tears. And she said, "My God, you just saved my life." And it's like, how? And she said, I read your story. And I read it last week, and I went to the doctor. I started to say vet. I went to the doctor, and she said, "I have Hashimoto's." And she said, "I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't read your story."
And that's the thyroid condition that you have that contributes to your gluten intolerance.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's a test that usually you have to ask for. Especially if you have a thyroid condition. I mean, I had to beg for it, and it's because it's an expensive test, and they like to, you know, most endocrinologists or specialists, not just mine, but others that I've heard from, you know, like you to go through an adjustment period with medications. You know, they start out very, with one pill to treat one issue, and then. But I needed an answer, so I sort of rushed it. But going back to the feedback, so, I mean, I'm now getting, you know, people to ask me to write about gluten-free restaurants and, you know, and the outpouring of people who have the very same symptoms that I do in the food industry, in the writing industry, and just in life in general, made me feel a whole lot better about literally telling dirty, deep, dark secrets, and some of them got cut, believe me.
So it was more graphic than pieces.
Oh, yeah.
I really admire that you did that because it's not easy, especially if you've successfully been hiding this for a long time.
Oh, my God, I haven't told anybody except my sister.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be any more embarrassing than you saying I have carpal tunnel from typing too much.
Oh, but I have that too.
Okay. But it is, you know, people don't talk about having diarrhea, right? They just don't.
No.
And they can be like actively ill, and it's not a thing people talk about.
No.
Did you just like, I guess it was in a way liberating, but it was it like in for a penny, in for a pound when you decided to go all out?
Yeah. And I talked with Tim a lot about this, and I was just like, oh, come on, you know. Yes, that's the truth, and I can kind of ride around it just by like maybe mentioning, and he's the one that really encouraged me to just say, just go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, when I typed one sentence, I was just like, I really and truly, I just shuddered, and I just thought if my mother was alive, she would probably ground me, you know, for putting that out there. And you think, oh, well, there's people who are like reading this over lunch or, you know, I mean, I don't know. But it's all been positive. And, you know, diarrhea is now a very topical conversation in our office, I'm happy to report.
So do people go to you with their
symptoms?
I'm
sort of the poster child now for, diarrhea, which gives way to all kinds of, you know, like shingles I could now hang out in front of my...
You don't have shingles, though, right?
No. Not yet. No, don't say that.
How were you, before you realized what the problem was, mm-hmm. and when you were in denial, mm-hmm. what were you doing to try and manage your symptoms?
Nothing. Denying. No, seriously. I started taking baking soda. Which
like stirred into a glass of warm water?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because that settled my stomach. And I learned how what's the drug that they give you for acid reflux?
So like,
you know, Nexium, mm-hmm. one of those things.
Prilosec.
And please don't sue me, drug company. But how that's just sort of really and truly there that it's not increased stomach acid that gives you acid reflux. It's decreased. So everybody who's taking Nexium, I would just ask you to ask your doctor why you're taking it because it really doesn't work. So a teaspoon of baking soda, you know, helped me. But I really didn't do anything. I started to, I did a couple of things. I did start to eat more in the morning, and like I had power bars and nuts and things at my desk so that I would snack, so that I would have, you know, try to feel like I was spreading out like calories. But the one thing that we haven't talked about, which is the most debilitating thing of this whole disease, is the foggy brain. And it really was unbelievably debilitating how my brain was not functioning. You know, it was probably, a lot of it was the thyroid, but a lot of it was the vitamin D. And I would be at the office, and I would look out the window, and I wouldn't even know where I was. I would be driving home, and I would have to pull over because I didn't know how to put my foot from the pedal to the, you know, from the gas pedal to the brake. I would accidentally turn off my car instead of turning off the Bluetooth, you know.
You're only 62, but were you afraid this was some kind of age-related dementia setting in?
That did cross my mind. And, you know, of course, most of the people who are my age and even younger, I mean, all of us who are busy and have those what we call senior moments or, you know, I mean, everybody just laughs it off and goes, oh, ha, 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 ha. But this was different. I mean, Tim wants me to tell the story of the time that I drove all the way to the office without putting my pants on. I mean, that's more than a senior moment.
Yeah. So explain that. Did you have like you didn't have pants on and then got to the office? That's like everybody's worst nightmare.
Yeah. I'll tell you the down and dirty on that is that it was cold and I had on a pair of tights and I was going to put pants on over my tights. And so I just put my sweater on and my coat and everything. And I got to the office and it was like, there's my sweater. And then there was my opaque black tights.
You can laugh about it now, but I can imagine it was like when you thought, what have I done?
Well, I cried. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it was very depressing because I didn't have any energy. And that meant I didn't have the energy to go to the grocery store. I would only go to the grocery store when I ran out of dog food. And I would watch people, you know, in restaurants that were laughing, and I would think, how are they doing that? I mean, how can they do that? I've forgotten how to do that. And when you start having thoughts like that, you know it's more than a senior moment, because it is so deeply debilitating all the time. And I saved just enough energy for work, because that's just what I do. And my publisher has even told me, you just don't know how to stop, or where to stop, or when to stop. And I don't. And I'm having to learn how to do that, because I kind of operate under, I've always operated in any job, or in even any relationship, any endeavor that I take to heart. I do it until it hurts, because I feel like it's not a good job unless it hurts. And I have to pull back from that, because it did more than hurt. It really almost did. The vitamin D thing can really do damage. And one of the doctors that I saw, that I had a 6 level on vitamin D, whereas 80 is like high and maybe 60 is like normal.
Wow.
And she told me that the only other vitamin D level that she's seen that was lower than mine was a 5, and the woman couldn't walk. And so, and it takes a long time to build something like that back up. And so that, combined with the thyroid and the whole sense of foggy brain, you're less likely to pick up the phone and call a doctor, because it just seems like walking to Europe. I mean, it seems that much of a challenge. And, you know, now it's so bizarre that I'll go home from work, and it's like 2 nights ago I went home from work and I cleaned out my fireplace. And I was just like, yo, man, I did something after work.
It had been a while.
Besides eat, you know? I mean, like little victories like that, it's crazy. But it's true that when you don't know how far gone you are until it lifts just a tiny bit. And it's a form of depression, but it's also a medical issue that your endocrine system is not giving you the right hormones, and that your vitamin level, your D level, which just in your absorption, your gut, and it's all about the gut, which would, you know, it's just this endless conversation about this this whole cycle of how this autoimmune disease is developed. But you have to grasp an understanding of so many things that are particular to you and your body, which can be completely different with somebody else who even has Hashimoto's. You know, I mean, everybody's body reacts differently, and there are people with Hashimoto's that are not gluten free. So it's just everybody's body is different.
I will say, and it's not like you and I hang out, but you've been here on the show several times, clearly during the time that you were quite ill, and I'm impressed by how well you faked it, because I had no idea.
Yeah.
Do you walk around now wondering who you encounter in your everyday life that might be coping with something that isn't apparent on the surface?
I do now, because they're telling me. And I'm much more receptive to... you know, when people start talking about things like migraine headaches, because I had migraine headaches as well, and I'd never had them before, and I haven't had one since the end of last summer. And, I'm much more sympathetic to anybody who has any kind of a medical condition now. And when people in the office start talking about things, I urge them to go to the doctor. And I'll tell you, one of the thing that really, not just waking up and not being able to move, but the symptom that I had that I first noticed was my hair falling out. And of course,
which is a common thyroid issue.
It can be not just a common thyroid issue. It can be, you know, a change in medication. And I wish we could come up with another word for stress that people actually took seriously, because now it's just like, it's sort of like how we refer to like the common cold. It's like, oh, I just have a cold. Oh, well, I just suffer from stress. Well, guess what? It's serious. You know, I mean, the effects of stress on your body, I now know. And so when younger people in my office are, you know, there's one gal in our office who was just going like, God, my hair is just falling out. And I just said, you go to a doctor right now, ask for a thyroid panel, get your, you know, get your vitamin levels checked. It's easy. They're easy tests. And, you know, take some supplements and, you know, we have to come up with another word for stress and don't do it. It's hard. It's really hard for driven people. And everybody in my that I work with are we're just pit bulls.
Well, stress is like a badge of honor when you know,
yes.
In certain careers, certainly.
Sure. And, you know, I joke with Tim, and I learned this lesson from I'm a longtime friend of Billie Jean King's, and she's just the smartest person in the world. And she just used to always say that when she was a tennis player and she was, you know, down to the finals at Wimbledon and she was down a point or down a match, I mean, or down a set, or that she would always say pressure is a privilege to turn herself around because a lot of people don't view it as that, but it can also go too far.
We're talking this hour with writer Nancy Nichols, the longtime dining critic for D Magazine, who writes about stepping down from that particular position with D in an essay that's in the March issue of the magazine called My Job Nearly Killed Me. If you'd like to join the conversation or if you have a question about gluten intolerance, you can give us a call at 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Summer Youth with hands-on workshops in robotics, Minecraft, game design, and visual arts for students entering K-12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is now open at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Nancy Nichols of D Magazine about her issue in the March her essay in the March issue called My Job Nearly Killed Me. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372. So, Nancy, now that you are not reviewing restaurants, if you wanted to, you could let people know what you look like.
Well, I guess I could.
Have you thought about it?
Nope. We talked about what the art was going to be, you know, accompanying my piece. And, you know, I at this point, I didn't think it was important. You know, I just didn't think it mattered, you know, what I look like attached to a story about this. And I think they came up with a really good idea of like, how to do it. I mean, I have posted some pictures on Facebook from trips and stuff because, I mean, I've been anonymous for a long time and haven't posted them, although, you know, some people know what I look like. But I don't know. Since I'm not reviewing restaurants, I just didn't think it was relative.
No, it's
I mean, I still, if I were still reviewing restaurants, I would still be anonymous. I'm still clinging to that. I think once you do, I still believe that you lose some objectivity there. And our new dining critic, Eve Hill Angus, I'm leaving it up to her, but she's not of the ilk to probably want her picture out there anyway. She's really a fascinating human being, and I look forward to reading her voice more in the magazine. It's going to be a great package. We've got a great team now. We now have extra food coverage. We kind of fell into that.
Is it hard to watch somebody else doing the job that you loved?
I think it would be hard if I didn't like her so much. And I like that we plucked her out of a pool that didn't include the usual Dallas food writing, you know, attitude, and you know, with the scars and the you know, loss of limb that goes with, you know, swimming in these in the waters of food writing these days now with blogs and Facebook and all the social media and anonymity that writers can, you know, bat you in the face with and then just, you know, go on about their day, and they're probably sitting two you know, cubes down from you. It was going to have to happen at some time, just because, you know, I'm 62 and I've been doing it for 18 years, and I think it's healthy to have more than one person doing it, and I hope that someday I can still write about, I mean, do reviews, because there are plenty of restaurants. It's actually much easier to eat in a restaurant and be gluten-free than I ever dreamed it would be. Now, some places, obviously, like, you know, Cane Rosso, are going to be off limits. But, you know, Stephen and I went to Lark on the Park the other day, and it's not an ad for Lark on the Park, but I'll just tell you that, you know, Stephen said to me, guys, like, okay, like, you know, how would you traverse this menu? And I was like going, well, pretty easy.
I could have that.
You know, the options were, you know, it was half and half. I mean, the sandwiches, obviously, you get without bread, but, you know, like burgers or whatever, but a grilled cheese sandwich, you probably can't do that without bread.
Before you got sick and even considered that gluten would be an issue, I mean, it's been a few years that restaurants have offered some different options for people. Did you ever, like, try the gluten-free substitution as of your review? You
did. Yeah, I wrote about Cozy Kitchen. Oh, gosh, I don't know how long ago they opened, but if I say 5 years, it probably means 10. But, you know, it's probably five to 7 years ago. And then Company Cafe. And I spoke with the chefs at both of those restaurants while they were trying to develop gluten-free options. And they were having a lot of trouble converting the flours and the fat, and, you know, particularly in pastries and desserts. That's the hardest area, because you don't get the binders and that gluten binds and affects in the baking process so much. I wrote about them and tasted them, and most of the food you'd never know. I mean, sweet potato hash, you know, grass-fed beef, you know, where you'd notice the difference would be the gluten-free buns, you know, the bread, which has gotten so much better, not just in the restaurants, but in the grocery stores. And the desserts were usually disastrous. So yeah, I've been tasting it for quite a while, and I'm happy to announce that it's so much better. And restaurants like Mi Casina has a gluten free restaurant, menu. And actually, Mexican food is pretty, you know, gluten.
A lot of corn instead of flour.
Yeah,
that sort of
as long as you stay away from the flour, and you know, your enchiladas are in corn tortillas, and you know, there's so many gluten-free options now, and I'm very lazy.
I doubt
sometimes
that's true.
When it comes to food preparation, and I'm single, so, you know, it's not like I want to go home and, you know, cook every night.
Right.
So I go to, you know, there's a couple stores like Snap Kitchen and MyFitFoods, and they sell prepared, you know, pretty fresh. Nothing's fresh if it's not made
in
the store. So I can't really it's made in a central place. But still.
You can take the dining critic out of the girl. But
No, I'll always be a critic. My father told me at 5 years old I should be a lawyer, because I just argued every point that he ever tried to make to me. But But anyway, so I go by these places and I stock up and I keep them in my freezer so that I can have a variety of food. So when I do cook, I'll make a soup, or I always have rice and beans in my refrigerator so that if I just want to slice up an avocado or, you know, something, then I can make a quick meal. But it's quite pricey, but it also affords me a wider range of food, and it's also helped me in my education of what I can and cannot eat. And it also somewhat guarantees that I won't accidentally, you know, glutenize myself, you know, if I buy these prepared foods. And I haven't been eating out in restaurants as much, so I don't have those temptations. And once I get on a program and I'm dedicated to it, I'm pretty good about sticking to it. But the cost is significant.
Let's go to the phones. We have Galen on the line in Plano. Hi, Galen.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, thanks.
I wanted to ask, how did she get over the stress? Like, what did she do to actively or passively rest herself and get past the stress, and how much of a priority did she make it? I say it because I'm a local massage therapist, and I see with a lot of my clients who are overly stressed, they do another activity instead of resting. You know, what did she do to rest?
I watch House of Cards. No, I'm being facetious. I am a massage addict, and I always have been. I can hear myself saying this, and it sounds so ridiculous, but I've been so busy, I haven't really developed my plan for not being busy, except I have taken some time off and done some travel. I'm also the travel editor of the magazine, so I went to Dubai to do a travel story, and then I just returned from Cuba. I'm doing a story on baseball in Cuba. I went with Eric Nadel, the Texas Rangers, and so I'm getting to do some stories like that. Now, that's really not relaxing because it was a beat down, you know, to be in a plane for 16 hours. But to answer your question, I'm planning on getting back into regular massage. I used to go once a week, and now I'm down to once a month. Getting a little bit more active. I do have dogs that I walk every day, and trying to learn how to say no to things, and actually I made the analogy the other day of, like, I felt like I was a rock climber and that somebody just picked me off the mountain just right before I got to the top and said, you can't do that anymore. And then they put me, you know, like in the sandbox, but my hands and arms and my feet were still climbing the rock. You know, it's like I haven't stopped that motion yet.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Rollins on the line in Dallas. Hi, Rollins.
Hi, Ron. Nancy, you know we admire you so much as a very sensitive professional. So I just wanted to ask you, as you entered this brave new world, what's been the most personal sense of loss you've held inside of you as you let go of life as you've known it and began your new trek? Thanks
for your call.
That's a very heavy question. Personal loss would be, I don't know if I've had a loss other than, I think it's, I'm kind of looking at it now that you asked me that, as it's really been more of a gain, you know, than a loss, unless you want to talk about pizza, you know, as being a loss. I don't think I'll lose my identity. I think I'm going to gain a new one. And that's kind of exciting because, at this point in my life, to have another door open to me and be able to write about things and to feel good and feel better and think that, you know, oh, maybe I will live past 65 instead of, like, I don't want to live past 65 is I can't really see any negative in that. So I don't know if I'm dodging a question or what, but I can't answer that it the way he asked me.
We have an email here from Karen who says, we need a gluten-free dining critic.
Oh, boy. I really don't want to be it, but I'm getting lots of requests for that, and I haven't decided that. And when I say I don't want to be it, I don't say that, and half-heartedly, or tossing it off, or being snotty about it. I just don't know if I'm ready. I don't feel qualified to. I'm not a doctor, obviously, and I'm getting people asking me for, how did you do a gut cleanse, and, what is your diet, and, tell me, how you got your vitamin D up. And everybody's body's so different that I can only share what I did. And I'll think about that, because I do think, God, I hate the word responsibility, but I probably do have a responsibility to make sure that, if the people are going to be serving gluten-free food, and, that they're doing it right. Because, some people are so sensitive to gluten that if, you go to a restaurant, and I'm going to single out Mika Sina just because I know that they have a menu, but there are countless others that do. You really need to have a portion of your kitchen that's gluten-free to cook in, because there are some people that are so hypersensitive that if they touch gluten, mostly celiac patients. But my niece is that way, and she tested negative for gluten. So everybody's tolerance is different. So maybe if I go. I told Chris earlier that I'm going to go 6 months without gluten, and then I'm going to go to Cane Rosa and eat a pizza and see what happens.
Is part of you hoping that you'll be fine?
Of course. I know I'm going to be fine. of course. But short answer is I'm thinking about it, not on a regular basis, but at some point, yeah.
Do you actually have any anxiety about, that first bite that you take, just to make sure that that this is the thing you need to be doing?
No, I don't. I have enough anxiety. That bank is closed. That bank account is full. I don't have any more anxiety than I already have.
We just have 20 seconds, but did you love Cuba?
I loved Cuba. The food is not great. The people are fantastic. And if you can go before we screw it up.
Nancy Nichols spent 18 years as dining critic for D Magazine. She is no longer reviewing restaurants, but she is still writing for D, and she has an essay titled My Job Nearly Killed Me in the March issue. Nancy, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Chris,
and thank you all for listening.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think, and you can send email to the show at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.